This is London Calling.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
I wish they'd get out of my way.
I love them.
I do. Really do.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Hello again, it's episode 11, season 5, Big Smoke Music Weekly, with me, Luke Scanlon, here in front of the microphone for you once again. We have a great episode in store for you, an artist I've been waiting for 3 years to chat to since our first chat, the brilliant Amazons. I have a sit down with frontman Matt Thompson. We have a chat all about their new album that went to number 5 in the UK album chart. We'll be chatting all about their upcoming tour, how he met Mel C from Spice Girls, what's going on there, and of course the story behind that new album and the big change in sound from the band. All that coming up, but first of all, let's have a little gig review.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Alright, this is a slightly different gig review. Now, this was down at The Brook in Southampton. I've mentioned this venue before. I went there to see Pete Doherty do a little acoustic set at the beginning of the year, and that is where he had a little nibble on my noggin and gave me actually a cut on my head. So I had war wounds from a Pete Doherty gig. But this time out, it was different. I went down with me old man and my brother, and it was a Clash tribute night. It was 45 years on from their debut album, The Clash. Self-titled album, of course, that classic punk album that actually peaked at number 12 in the album charts way back in 1977. So yeah, quite a big thing, because of course back then the charts even harder to get further up because more people were buying records. Now, the name of the band were called London Calling. Don't know where they got that name from, but I think going into it, anyone going to see a tribute, you're a bit like, don't know, what's this going to be like? Is it going to be a bit shit? I think just by pure nature of tribute bands, I think we've all seen videos of terrible ones in the past. So you do have that niggling thought in the back of your head, just thinking, oh man, is this going to be a proper letdown? I think, of course, for a band like The Clash, a band that I was raised on, had it playing in my dad's car all the time, in the living room, just I have so many memories of listening to The Clash. And it was really, along with them and The Jam, two bands that kind of set me on my musical path, as it were. So yeah, I was really intrigued coming into the gig as to what the night was going to be like, but it was actually brilliant. And the venue is so cool, man. It does just feel like an old American bar. It's got exposed brickwork, a nice like balcony seating area. And yeah, it's just a great place to go to watch a band. And they serve a great pint of Guinness. I've mentioned the importance of a good pint of Guinness many, many times on the show before. But yeah, anyway, London Calling, they came out. They looked the part as well. Rolled up long sleeves on their red shirts. Stars embroidered onto their chest. And yeah, just properly looked the part. And I have to say, sound the part, and that is the key here, isn't it? You've got to sound the part if you're going to live up to a great band like The Clash, and they were so good. So what they did is basically do that debut album from The Clash cover to cover, and it was so good, man. Like, Career Opportunities in particular was amazing. That was really, really good. Janie Jones was class as well. And of course, because it's such a short punk album, that they had quite a lot of time to fill after that, so they didn't stop there. They played all of the hits: White Man, Hammersmith Palais, Should I Stay or Should I Go, Stay Free, Rudy Can't Fail, Rock the Casbah. They literally did the whole thing, man. Any track you were thinking of, they were doing it. And it was just great to see. There was so much love for the songs being played. I think, obviously, slightly older crowd. I think me and my brother brought the average age down quite a lot. But it was great to go and see, man. And just people clearly reliving their youth and who have got such a connection to these songs. As I said, I have a great connection and an affinity to these tracks because I was raised on them. But I think even more so, if you kind of were living it at the time those tracks came out, you've obviously got all the memories harking back to your youth, going to gigs, dressing up as a punk, you know, your Harrington, your Doc Martin boots, all of that stuff must come flooding back. And they always do say, don't they, music is one of the strongest paths to your memory. So yeah, that clearly brought a lot of great memories back for people. And of course, me and my brother, me and Jack, were straight down the front and jumping around with all the old skinheads, getting nice and sweaty in between pints of Guinness. So yeah, all in all, a great night.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Now, I don't want to dick around too much and chat too much to you about the gigs I've been to. I want to get straight into this chat. Now, in the intro, I told you all about our massive Big Smoke In Focus artist for this episode, Season 5, Episode 11, Big Smoke Music Weekly. An artist formed back in 2014 who have since enjoyed success with three top 10 UK albums, the most recent of which, How Will I Know If Heaven Will Find Me, went to number 5 in the UK album charts. They're an artist previously described as a group known for crafting catchy and melodic arena rock anthems. It can only be The Amazons. Yes, after 3 long years, I finally got the chance to sit down once again with Amazon's frontman, Matt Thompson. Here is how we got on.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Well, Matt Thompson, welcome again to Big Smoke Music Weekly. It's been 3 years, man. 3 long years.
In some ways, that feels correct, and other ways, that just feels completely wrong. It doesn't.
I'm going to put it out there. Crazy. You've aged far better than I have.
No, I feel like you've leaned up a little bit, dude. Is that okay if I say that?
No, Joe, I'm going to put this straight down to the fact I'm using one of those ring lights right now. You know, like the really, they hide
Skin's
everything.
Good, dude.
Yeah, I actually look like a sack of shit at the moment, but these ring lights, superb, man.
I need to invest in one of those.
Exactly. Well, Matt, there is so much I want to talk to you about, but I'm going to start off at like the best thing, the only place I can start. Okay. This picture of you and Mel C. How and why did this happen?
So we did a show. It's a pretty famous show in the UK called Sunday Brunch.
And, of course.
Yes, for those who haven't heard of it, it's a kind of one of those Sunday morning, you're a bit hungover, you throw it on the TV and it's kind of all through, it's a long show. They have guests on and they cook loads of food and they have musical guests for us. This week was us. So we played a song at the end of the show and then got to speak to Mel C afterwards. And I honestly can't speak highly enough. She was incredibly gracious with her time, really friendly, very welcoming, extremely warm, and very real, like a very authentic person. And she didn't mind talking to us. And I asked her, like, we've got a song on our new record called Northern Star, and I would love your blessing. Because obviously she had a song called Northern Star and an album, actually, her debut album. And she said, you know what? I'll give it a listen, but I'm going to pass the Northern Star mantle onto you. And I was like, oh my God. And
That's all you need, right, man? That's all you need. I mean, the album's been very successful anyway, but never mind that. Mel C's given it the seal of approval.
Yeah, I can't. I honestly, she's probably, like, if you think about, like, she's been one of the most famous people, or at least part of one of the most famous bands in the world for 20 years, 25 years. And how many exchanges, how many people have, like, wanted a bit of her time, how many people have wanted a piece of her? And for her to just treat us in such a human and genuine way was actually really, really moving. I absolutely loved our experience with her. She was
nice,
so
man.
Awesome.
Absolutely love that. Absolutely love that. Well, let's talk about the Amazons. After all, that's what we're here for. So, mate, putting it out there, I do love the new album. It's a bit of a different sound, yeah. I'd say. Obviously, first album was kind of like anthemic tunes. Second one, I thought Future Dust, that was quite like an angrier, more of a classic rock sort of album. Mm-hmm. This one, bit more different, a bit more emotional about it. And I know, obviously, I think a lot of it's to do with being apart from your girlfriend, right, who's in LA, who's currently in London with you now?
I can see her right now.
Hello, girlfriend. So, yeah, you tell me, man, how have you found that? How did you come to that new sound? And how have you found the reaction to the new sound? Because we spoke just before starting recording how some people are, you obviously have your fan base, and naturally there will be people that would be like, what the Jeff is this?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a great question. I think, well, there's a few elements to this answer. I'd say the number one, like chronologically, basically, we came off the back of touring Future Dust. And what I said I felt missing to the boys was just fulfillment, like a satisfaction when we came off stage. A fulfillment of the idea that we were creating songs that we could share with the audience at these shows. And I wanted something that was a little bit more bright and a bit more full of life, because I felt a lot of the Future Dust stuff, there was this like us and them divide with our own audience. And I just felt like that wasn't reflective of how I want to do this. And it didn't make me feel whole, to make fulfill me at all, even though it was a lot of fun to just push our sound as dark and as heavy as we could. And I think we did that with Future Dust. And it was a lot of fun to do, but it was just, it lacked like a kind of heart and soul. So I was like, we need to do that. Secondly, we wanted to really strip the sound back in the writing to vocals and guitar, vocals and piano, and like work out what songs like moved us in such a stripped back way, basically. So the idea would be like, if I can't get the melody or the emotion or the story or the lyric or the title right at such an early stage with the acoustic and my voice, then it would just like scrap it and move on. Because why would we put all that work arranging something with the band if the lyric isn't there, or if the story's not there, or if just that kind of real first test of being able to play a song, like How Will I Know, to the boys. And if they're like, then it was like, why even bother? Let's move on. So that was a couple of things. And I thought actually that way of working was really like solidified. It was crystallized by the circumstances that everyone was in, basically with lockdown. You know, I didn't get to see the boys for months at a time. Sure. And so we had to write alone, and we had to create demos by just sending, you know, files over WhatsApp and stuff. But it gave time and space to be like, actually, there's something in this idea, but I haven't got it quite right yet. So instead of forcing the issue, I would kind of put it on the back burner, work on something else, and just gave time to like revisit songs and learn more about them and stuff. And then, and then honestly, like really about halfway to the end of 2020, that kind of real epiphany of what the album should be about, like lyrically. And it was really just based, inspired by this long distance relationship we've been in for the last few years that became 10 times more difficult, 100 times more difficult, seeing as we didn't see each other.
Mate, I've been there before. It's the worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is no fun whatsoever.
You know, and trying to navigate travel bans, international travel bans, you know, and, you know, it was 7 or 8 months between seeing each other. And that was just inspired the music, you know, to express myself through the lyrics and to tell that story and to just navigate loving someone when they're just physically absent. And the music really became an outlet for that in the way that has never really happened with the Amazons music before. So that's really the kind of main themes of the record.
Love it, man.
Which is different for us.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting you say about kind of like the vocals and the lyrics coming more to the fore, because I think that was one of the first things that drew me to you guys and your music in the first place. You do have a very emotive voice, and seeing you live, you always are like, not act out the songs, but really portray the songs. And I think that's what draws everyone into the music. Mm. But I think even more so on the new album, man, was that like, obviously you said it was this hard time. Mm. When you were recording it, were you really conscious of trying to portray that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that really was the kind of mantra of the of all the decision making when you make the record. When we made this record, we said to Jim Abyss, the producer, on like many calls before we even started, it was like, if we could just approach this album like and with this kind of mantra of whatever decision we make needs to be able to help convey the emotion of the song. It needs to be like, so, and when I say decision making, I'm saying literally as minutiae of like the drums and pedals and like the guitar sounds and the way the bass feels with the kick drum and all these like tiny micro decisions that we are, you know, third time through this process of being in a band and doing a record, you know, we learn like it's actually just the accumulation of like hundreds, if not thousands, of like micro decisions. And I just said, if we could have this kind of parameters of success with every single little decision we make of like, okay, I like that guitar sound, but like, does it tell the story of this song? Like, how best do we like find the emotion of this song in, you know, the vocal performance or whatever like that? So that was really the kind of the way we looked at making this record as opposed to the last two.
Yeah, for sure. What was, obviously you said you hadn't seen the rest of the band for like months on end, as well as your girlfriend. 2020, what a great year for everyone. when you were kind of, when you got these kind of these scribblings or these voice notes together, what was like their initial reaction from the rest of the band? Because I myself, as a punter and a fan, I love that you have been adaptable over these three albums, and I've loved that like progression. But like, how did it go around down with the rest of the guys? Because obviously, it's probably, if you put them in order, your albums, you'd probably go like heavier Future Dust, then the first album, then this one. That would be like the more natural progression, wouldn't it?
Yeah, totally. I think I was surprised by the boys' reaction, because a song like Northern Star or Say It Again or, you know, I'm Not Ready or For the Night even don't really fit the makeup or like the profile of the songs that we've done before. Like we've basically built a name on. So I was like, ooh, are they going to like this? Are we going to just have to like, is this just going to sit in a drop? Is Northern Star going to sit in a drop box forever? But they really responded to it. Not just like, oh, nice song. It was like, oh, I love that. Why don't we do this, this, and this? And I was like, cool, right? We're onto something here. If the boys who were like...
Now we're cooking.
Exactly. You know, I can come up with songs and melodies and lyrics, but it is really the boys who make up the sound of the Amazons. They are coming up with ideas and stuff. I was like, okay, now we're rolling. Like, this is going to happen. And this is different and a bit like, okay, there's a scary element and stuff. Like, okay, fine. You know, I read reviews on the record and it's like, cool. It doesn't really push the boat out, et cetera, et cetera. You're not reinventing the wheel. It's like, okay, in a wider context, probably not. But in terms of the context of this band, we're doing stuff that is completely different to what we've done before. And I feel the same way about like the Royal Blood stuff as well, because we supported them on that arena tour.
Yeah,
they put out that fucking sick album that actually towed the line between the classic Royal Blood sound that everyone loves and the reason why they're into Royal Blood and like the stuff that makes Royal Blood special and different. And they managed to create this whole new dimension to what they do. And I think it was, I actually think that album was criminally underrated. By not fans really, because it went to fucking number one and they sold out arenas.
Yeah,
but like critics, like I don't know, I struggle to believe that they know what they're talking about any more than the next person sometimes.
Critics my ass, Matt. Critics my ass. I was going to ask you as well. Well, going on Northern Star, that's the one track that you keep referring to. I saw that footage. It was one of the installs that you did recently. And like everyone knew every word, man. Surely that's the only real like seal of approval that you need, right? Other than Mel C's seal of approval.
Of course. Yeah, that was an insane experience. I'll go anywhere you go, my baby. We were in Bristol. The album had been out not 3 days, and they knew the words. I mean, that was a moment. What you don't see in that clip, it didn't get recorded. So I start the first verse and I like stop and I'm like, what the hell is going on? Because people were like, every person in there was singing the words to this song. I was like, it's been out for literally 72 hours.
You who leaks the lyrics?
yeah, exactly.
They got out somehow.
It's a joke. No, it was amazing. And if I could bottle up the energy of that particular show, I would definitely do that. And I would be addicted. I could put it in pill form. Yeah, it's incredible.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Let's see what's going on over at Sound On. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. Yes, just a reminder to check out Seblo's amazing set down at the Met, which you can view now on Sound On's YouTube channel. As always, all you need to do is search Sound On, all one word, on YouTube, click like and subscribe, and give that video a watch. Really great video, actually, from young Seblo. Great, great songwriter as well. He's got a lot to say about modern Britain and, let's be honest, there's a lot for him to get stuck into at the moment, isn't there? So yeah, do go check that out, plus all the other brilliant content from Sound On. That's over on YouTube, and stay up to date with their Instagram at SoundOnYT. Big Smoke Music Weekly in partnership with Sound On. All right, I think it's about time we got back to my chat with Matt Thompson, lead singer of The Amazons. We're going to have a slight gear shift, mate. A quick feature called Either Ors. You've got to pick A or B option, Matt. If you're ready, don't worry, it's not major. Number one, Mel C. Have her join the Amazons or you leave the band to team up with Spice Girls?
Oh. Oh, God. A.
I mean, would you have arguments with Ginger Spice?
Potentially. Yeah, potentially. There'd be a some sort of Celtic ancestral power struggle there. I don't know. I feel like, bring Mel C into the fold because she could add so much to this band. And I'm not sure I could add much to the Spice Girls, if I'm honest.
I reckon she could bring in some great choreography, man. I'd love to see like an Amazons, like Spice Girls / Self-Esteem-esque performance. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, it would be incredible. She's an awesome singer as well. Like, I was revisiting a lot of the Spice Girls stuff, and she's the one like hitting those high notes, all the ad-libs, and it's amazing.
Yeah, man. I'm pretty sure Blossoms went on stage with her not so long ago as well, actually. Came out.
Yeah, I'm
going
to have to watch that. I think it was Glastonbury. I'm going to have to watch the video of that.
Yeah, for sure. Number two, Reading win the Premier League or Amazon's headline Glastonbury?
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
You did ask me to ask you tough questions.
That's a tough question. I love Reading, and I always will be. I'm a massive supporter. But I also think if you look at current trends, like what would Reading have to sacrifice in terms of its individual identity as a club to get to the Premier League? Do you know what I mean? So I'm a Reading supporter like through thick or thin. Like I
love how much this is testing you, by the way.
It will have to be Glastonbury.
Are you sweating, Matt?
It will have to be Glastonbury.
Glastonbury. Okay, yes. Fair play. That would be pretty special, to be fair. This is, I'll go with this question. Would you rather win an award for Rear of the Year or Redhead of the Year?
Ooh, Rear of the Year, as in bottom.
As in your derriere.
Great question.
This is like very much like a mid-noughties glossy mag question.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it. It's not something that in my world that we get exposed to, so I can actually enjoy it. I would say Redhead of the Year because I feel like redheads need more visibility than Rears. I think Rears are pretty big in pop culture right now.
They're quite well documented, aren't
so,
they?
So just, you know, more visibility for the redheads and the very low-key plight of the redhead, especially in UK high schools, secondary
for sure
schools.
I'll clip that up and play it to my dad, mate. He'll love you for the rest of his life.
Oh, brilliant. Is he a redhead?
Nice. He is indeed. Nice. Well, he's more of a grey head now, to be honest, but yeah. Awesome. Well, that's the end of Either Ors.
I wish they'd get out of my Why?
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump into a bit of close-up 60 seconds action. This time out, I'm catching up with frontman of Louis and the Shakes, Louis himself. Close-up 60 seconds. Louis, welcome. Welcome to Big Smoke Music Weekly. First off, mate, do you remember us talking like years ago?
Yeah, well, that's kind of why when I saw your name come in on the email, I was like, hold on a minute. This has been a while, but Yeah, I know.
I did, as soon as we started talking before recording, I was like, he obviously does remember it. But I was like, I just want to double check, man. Just want to double check. Because I think it was 2018, maybe even 2017.
I want to say 2018, that sort of time, because the next year was COVID, or like that kind of like time that it was going to be COVID and stuff. So we were kind of, like we were about to sort of go crazy and go ham, and then COVID happened. So it all kind of not fell apart or anything, but you know, everything just kind of like, it just was there and then just went quiet.
Obviously, Matt, I've spoken to so many bands since all the COVID shit has happened and stuff like that. What conversations did you guys had? Because obviously it wasn't like an easy period for any band whatsoever. But were there points where you're like, fucking hell, do we call it a day?
Well, to be honest, man, I think because of why we were speaking, it was around that sort of Snake Hips time. So we just recorded this like new tune. It was kind of like a new direction. We were officially Louis and the Shakes. Yeah, we had Snake Hips. And then after that, we were going to have another single, try and do the whole beat the algorithm on the Spotify system, sort of climb up the ladder with these singles. Yep. And then, COVID happened. And we were sort of like looking at each other like, what are we going to do? My drummer was even thinking about leaving, bless him. Like, and we just thought, like, let's just get in the studio and record an album instead. Instead of sort of trying to do a single after a single and like, you know, financially as well, like truthfully speaking, it's quite a difficult game that to play. But at that time, it was really like backs against the wall, like you were throwing every bit of money that you had at it. So we were just like, why don't we just record an album and have a proper campaign out of it, which stretched over the course of, I think it was like 2020, 21?
Got you. And the drummer's still with you?
The drummer is still with us. Yeah. I didn't go at his throat or anything like that. No, he's still here with us. Yeah.
Nice. Look, I've got to ask, right, on a purely musical level, what would be the most annoying part to lose of a band? Would it? Because I can imagine a drummer would be quite annoying to lose.
Yeah, it would, I suppose.
Can you just replace guitarists, just get rid of them?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. I don't know, really. Like, In the band, Louis and the Shakes, I mean, it's a tough call who you'd want to lose, to be honest.
Who are you getting rid of?
Myself. I'll let them like do it. I'll just be manager. Like, and then those three can, well, I mean, they'd be a super group. So I'll just manage them.
Joe, for a minute then, are we on Big Sweat Music Weekly or Big Brother? I was like, who are you kicking out? It's time to go. Davina McCall, Wheeler out.
Yeah. Please don't swear.
You are on live television. So, mate, anyway, let's talk about the new tune, Time Has Come. Absolutely huge sound, by the way. Like, really big sound. Cheers. I'm loving it, man. I've got to ask as well, because it sounds a little bit synthy, bubbling underneath.
Yeah.
Is that synth, or is that a very good pedal being used?
No, yeah, it's a synth, and that was kind of like the new equipment that we introduced to these last two singles. So, Before Time Has Come was Trailblazer, which kind of had little sparks of the synth being sort of decorated.
Yeah, because that's kind of similarly big noise that on that tune.
Yeah. Kind of like really sort of anthemic and rousing that one. So it was kind of the heavier side, but there's like just like twinklings of the synth like in little places. And yeah, I suppose like there was just a few more electronic elements being introduced on these two new tracks. So again, with Trailblazer, there was like a bit of a drum machine, sort of like bossa nova type middle eight that we sort of like managed to crowbar into the song. And then, with this one, you're right, basically. It's like the bed of the track is a synth that kind of like, it's just there. And I love it, to be honest. And that was like very intentional, though. That wasn't like we didn't like stumble upon it. It was like that was like the idea from the get-go, kind of like, I suppose, making ourselves a bit more commercial, dare I say. I don't know if that's like a good term to use nowadays, but just like open, yeah, do you know, just like opening us up to a different direction.
Yeah, that's a good thing to hear, actually, man, because I've got loads of mates who are really talented artists and stuff, and they become so, like, I think you're right, like commercial or even like that dirty word pop, they're so, like, almost to their detriment, like, won't go anywhere near a sound like that. But I'm like, your talent, it brings you to a wider audience, and I think it also shows you as a more skilled artist in a way.
100%, man. I think, like, every artist that you'd speak to would probably say the best bands out there sort of develop their sound album after album, even single after single, really, in the case of nowadays as well. But, like, yeah, going back to it, like, I saw this interview recently with Foles, who was sort of like a big influence on us at the moment. Like, again, we were sort of like taking little bits of inspiration from their like latest record and stuff. And they were like saying how their first two albums, it was whatever it was, like that, like very indie boy era of that time. But then they were like, we really wanted to kind of like open ourselves up to kind of like dance music, because they love dance music as like a group of guys.
That new album as well absolutely slaps.
Yeah,
Life Is Yours, man. Incredible.
It's probably one of my favourites, to be honest. And like the way it's just
probably
so...
probably is my favourite Foles album.
Yeah, the way it like consistently flows throughout from like start to finish, you completely get it, get like where they were as well, that time writing it. But yeah, like I just know that, like, again, from that interview, he said, like, yeah, we just wanted to kind of drop dance elements into our tracks because we like that as a group. So going back to us, yeah, it was very much like these records, like, okay, well, we like synthy stuff. Let's try and like put it in if we can. Like, that's, again, just like a bit more of an honest representation of us, really.
Yeah, man, for sure. And by the way, with your hair and beard combo, mate, you could rival Yanis right now, I reckon. Give him a run
for his
money.
Do you know what? Because obviously, because we're both Greek as well. And I was thinking, like, if I ever get on that level of him, like, who would be the better Greek? I mean, who you backing?
Nice, nice. Is it like how I, because I'm like half Irish, I can usually spot someone who's Irish. Can Greek people do that as well? You know?
Well, to be fair, with his name, Luke, I think...
Yeah, I mean, regardless of the name, that is literally like being called Paddy McPaddy, isn't it?
Yeah. With my name, it's like, is he Italian? Maybe it's a bit French. With Yanis, it's just like, okay, he's Greek.
Yeah, there's no fucking around there. He's literally as Greek as yogurt, man.
That's brilliant.
So with the change in your sound, you mentioned obviously earlier in like the embryonic stages, it was like Louis kind of like solo, then became the Shakes. When you're thinking up these new sounds and stuff, is that quite like a democratic approach in that sense, or are you like, lads, we're doing this?
No, I think like, listen, like, again, with every band, there's always a songwriter that kind of like leads the way, and I'm not shy to say that I like bring that to the table. That's like very much the spine of Louis and the Shakes, is me kind of being like, I've got these songs, guys, we want to kind of learn them. But within that, everyone adds their own bits as well. You know, like Manny brings such a unique kind of sound to his drumming, his kind of style and stuff, and he's pulling on influences from all over the shop. You know, he loves hip-hop, but then he also has like really heavy kind of music that he loves. He loves metal music, which I'm like trying to incorporate ever so slightly into our new songs. But that's a great example, you know.
Nice, man. Love it. Right, well, Lou, if you're ready, mate, we'll hop into the 60 seconds. Number one, the best biscuit to dunk into a cup of tea, and why?
I love bourbons, chocolate bourbons, just because then it's like melted chocolate.
Love it.
Well, that's a great start. Come on.
I mean, 5 seconds gone. That's incredible. I'm going to be, this is going to be really awkward, actually. And then, the rest of the minute, which will be like, all right.
I
actually weirdly interviewed The Motive with the last band to do Close Up 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
And James was like, oh, yeah, Digestives. I was like, that's just falling straight in your tea, man.
Well, also, come on, man. I have a bit of creativity. I love those guys. I'm excited to see them on Friday, but come on. Digestives.
Great guys, but after that, I was like...
Yeah.
Number two, your favourite item of clothing to wear on stage. Go.
Oh, that's a good one. At the moment, I'm rocking a black blazer. Which isn't even mine. It's actually Jamie's in the band, but I'm loving that at the moment. Yeah, that's suave but cool.
I was just enjoying that. When you told me that, you're just stroking your chin.
I started. Yeah, it's a natural. It's part of, you know. It's part of the charm.
Like, it was proper. Like, yeah, when you're headlining a show at 7 and you've got a business deal in Tokyo at 10. Love it. Number 3, mate, is, so this one is, it can even be your biggest pet peeve when you're on stage or in the crowd as a punter. So your biggest pet peeve at a gig.
It's when people don't shut the fuck up. Oh, can I swear? Oh god, sorry.
Yeah, swear away, mate.
Yeah, mate, when people don't stop talking. I've actually got a story about that recently as well. It's just like, why are you even here? It's like, go home.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Pet peeve on stage. I suppose just when someone messes up and you can hear it. I suppose that's like, just like grinds my gears a little bit. But then we all mess up, and we're all humans.
I bet though, like that is something that happens, and the band notes it. In the crowd, 100%.
Yeah. Everyone will come off like from the show and like, yeah, there's a buzz, but we'll be like, oh man, that happens, and like, we messed up there or whatever. And then everyone's like, that was amazing, and we're like, what? No, that wasn't great. Like, but going back,
yeah, and then you're like, you're that prick that wouldn't shut up.
That's it. So this story, I've got to tell you this real quick. If there's time, is there time?
Oh, go for it, mate. The time is firmly paused. Don't worry.
Me, my girlfriend, and my mum, actually, very rough and roll, went to see, and my auntie, went to see Michael Kiwanuku recently.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, and there was a couple, I'd say mid-40s, 50s, drunker skunks. They would not shut up. Like,
oh, mate.
She mostly wouldn't shut up, and she was, like, falling all over him, and, like, she was, like, proper, like, oh, like, not even talking about the gig. Like, if you're talking about him, fair enough. They're just having a chat, like, about their shopping or whatever. I don't know, but it's like, what are you doing here?
Like, mate, that is like, that's bad enough at any gig, but let alone something that's like a soulful, nice set like that.
Yeah.
When you, like, really want to zone into the music and the emotion of it.
Yeah. I mean, it was about 3 songs in and I told them where to go, basically. Nice. And they did.
How did that go down? Oh, they actually did.
Yeah, they did. And everyone around us did like this weird sort of like clap of applause or like nods of the head, like, nice one, mate. Yeah, like,
I'd love it if when they applaud you went, can everyone shut up?
Yeah. Michael's playing.
Mate, I completely feel you though. That is the worst. That is the worst, man. Right, mate, you've got 18 seconds, so you've got plenty of time for 2 questions. You've got loads to put your feet up, man. Number 4 is, who is playing you in a Hollywood blockbuster about your life?
Not Tom Cruise, he's a little bit too small. Listen, I've been told a few times I look a bit like Bradley Cooper. I'm just saying. It's the hair.
I was so excited about where that was going to go. I was like, where's it going? Okay, Bradley, it might be the hair.
Yeah. Granted, it's by like mostly mums and middle-aged women, but
I would take that.
Well, okay.
Hey mate, is that sort of the equivalent of like the BBC 6 music dance that buy all the merch?
Yeah. Like, I'm here for it, you know.
You've got all the Bradley Cooper fans coming to your gigs.
Yeah. I'll take it all day long.
Nice, mate. And just to end, sir, we have describe. Well, I'm going to say, yeah, we'll go with it. Describe London in 3 words to an alien.
On the downfall. Does that even make sense? I meant to say, like, it's just a downhill spiral, amazing, isn't it? So,
Love it. That's the 60 seconds anyway. On the downfall.
Well, that is what an upbeat conversation it's been, but what a way to end.
Close Up, 60 seconds. Close Up are a London-based national live promoters, booking agent and record label. They showcase the best indie and electronic talent nationwide across live shows and festivals. They've been endorsed by DIY, Dork, Jägermeister and more. Head over to www.closeuppromo.com for the latest events, artists and listings.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
Now for the final section of this episode's Big Smoke In Focus interview with the brilliant Matt Thompson of the Amazons. We obviously spoke earlier on about how things have been going the last few years, what happened to him during COVID, not seeing his girlfriend. And in this part of the chat, we got down to chatting about the band's third album and how it hit the top five of the UK album chart. And I had to ask Matt about that album title. So Matt, I was going to ask, title of the new album, How Will I Know If Heaven Will Fight Me? First of all, cheers, bit of a mouthful. but I wanted to ask you, what, because obviously heaven is heaven as we know it and like godly and such like, but it can be a different meaning. You can apply it to anything, like could be 3 o'clock at the Majeski. Do you know what I mean? So what is, in relation to the album, what is heaven for you? Is it straight up heaven or a wider meaning?
That's a cool question, actually. That, I haven't had that question before, and I have enjoyed promoting this record and hearing people's take on the title.
You can, did you just chuck the hand grenade? Just chuck the hand grenade, see what happens.
You know what? I remember when we first were talking about the title of the album, and Joe said it was his favorite lyric from the album, How Will I, and the opening track, How Will I Know? It's like the first line of the chorus. And we were like, it's bold, man. Like, that's bold. Like, are we sure we want something that long? And, but I think it's good to be bold. I think it's good to just be, to do something, you know, like to take any sort of creative risk, even if it's a little bit, you know, it's not a huge risk, of course. It's just, it's not a snappy title. It's just a title that I feel like frames the rest of the record in a really emotive way. So what is my heaven? Well, it changes. I mean, my heaven when we were writing the record and I hadn't seen my girlfriend for 8 months was most certainly somewhere in Mexico where we could meet.
Yeah,
that was certainly heaven at the time. That's what we had to do.
The only place that was open for a while, wasn't it? Mexico.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people went to Mexico and met, you know, other people. And it changes, man. And you know what? Heaven, for when we've kind of been thinking about it, heaven's never really been the Christian, you know, or like even or the organized religion take on it, really. I think everyone's heaven is slightly different. It's just so personal, which is what I also love about the title. It's like, it's kind of everyone who's on the tube, you know, on the London Underground and sees the poster, you know, and doesn't know who the band are, they're going to look at that question and that it's going to mean something completely different to every single person. And I think that's a really cool thing.
Exactly. Apply your own meaning. I wanted to ask you as well about There's a Light, probably a track we haven't really spoken about actually so far. Mate, that opening line, I want you like the morning, is just like, that is like such a weirdly relatable thing. I think anyone who's like actually been with someone they care about, that is just, ah. And I, first time I heard that track, I was like, this is like the most, like the track that's grabbed me the most, probably in that sense, since Palace, I'd say. Because it's kind of along that, you know, in that bracket. So where, tell us about that tune. I presume, I'm guessing again, that links to your girlfriend.
Yeah, that's one of the ones more, There's a Light, it's definitely one of the more explicit songs when it talks about the relationship, really, and just being really plain about how I feel. That was actually written with a guy called Will Bloomfield, a friend of ours, friend of the band. And, you know, we just kind of hung out and we were talking about like that whole thing of like how to navigate loving someone when they're actually physically absent. And that could be, they could be physically absent for so many different reasons. Like, he'd lost his dad within the last couple of years, basically. And, you know, he was dealing with that. And, you know, I had my own thing with my girlfriend, but they aren't, you know, of course, they're not equal or anything like that in terms of effect on life or anything like that. I'm just saying it was just, we were coming to the same theme, but from completely different angles. And it was this desire to like go actually like, why don't we make, instead of just wallowing in the darkness, wallowing in self-pity, you actually want to create this like mantra, like, actually, I believe that it's going to be better. I believe it's going to be okay. I believe I'm going to see this person again. And that was the kind of angle, really. Like, it was, there's this kind of defiance about it. Like, there's a defiance across this record. Like, my favorite lyric of this album's in I'm Not Ready. The closing song of the record, which says, which is, life is cruel, but not right now. And I like that. There's a defiance against things that are out of your control.
Sense of hope. Yeah, man. Love it. Love it. Let's have a wee chinwag about tour then. So it starts, as we're recording, next week in Guinness Land, in Dublin. Rock and roll.
Yes.
And then you've got actually quite a few dates, and you're playing the Roundhouse on the 20th, which is going to be insane. I just wanted to ask you, because the last time I saw you is annoyingly was 3 years ago. It was the Brixton Academy show, and I believe that was your birthday that day, was it not? Was it your birthday? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that was my 26th.
There you go, man. I swear to God, I was 26 at that point as well. I'm 26. Like, that's it. Because of COVID, I'm 26 for another 2 years.
Forever. Yeah, yeah.
but I was going to say, man, because obviously Roundhouse is going to be very special, iconic venue. But Brixton, also iconic, on your birthday. Does anything top that at the moment? Like, it's going to have to take a lot to beat that, right?
Yeah, I knew that was a really special night. I kind of, everything tallied up. I mean, I enjoyed everything about that night. I mean, yeah, I just, that night was an interesting one. It was so much pressure we put on ourselves. I'm so excited to kind of...
I can imagine that's quite easy to do on a big night, right? Yeah, like, get caught up in the completely, like, oh my God.
Instead of like going like, cool, right, we've just done the last couple of weeks on tour and we were in a really good place, let's just go on and play it. It was like, we're playing Brixton now, guys. Like, you need to become a quote-unquote band who play Brixton, right? And there was a little bit of imposter syndrome when we played that venue, I have to say, which I've just diagnosed now when I actually think about how we were feeling and how we were reacting.
Yeah, for sure.
It was, in hindsight, that was total imposter syndrome of like, how did we get here? This is insane. And of course, like, it's my birthday. It has to be the best thing ever. And I'm not saying it wasn't. It was actually really, really awesome. It was one of the best gigs we ever played.
Unbelievable. Right?
But that doesn't, you know, stop it being outrageous pressure on the lead up to it.
Yeah,
I can imagine. I think we're ready to play Roundhouse and, like, I don't know, just own it a bit more. And I've actually never been to it. I've been to a Q Awards about 4 or 5 years ago at Roundhouse, and I thought, this is an amazing venue.
It's so cool. I was going to ask as well, because obviously you mentioned before like the imposter syndrome, and I can totally get that. But now you've got like, you've just got your third top 10 album. Like,
hey, dude, first top five, man. Come on.
First top five, yeah, but you've got three in the top 10. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So I love the little eyebrow raise to put me in my place. Yeah. Do you guys like, have you had those conversations where you're like, yeah, like, yeah, man, we're like a solid, like, established band. You were anyway, but has it banished all of that imposter syndrome?
On a creative level, and on just like being quote unquote in a band and like touring and things like that. Yeah. Like, we've been a band officially really for about 8 years now. We've done 3 records. So we feel like we're getting the hang of like how to do it. Like, we're not really, I wouldn't say we're natural at anything. Wouldn't say we're natural performers. I'm not a natural singer. I'm not natural songwriters. Not natural, like, album makers. But I actually think we're getting better. And I think people can sense that we are, not to sound pretentious, but, like, honing our craft. Like, getting better at, like, being able to express ourselves. Like, being able to paint the picture in a more vivid way. But established in, like, a financial way.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably sure. If we hadn't just come off a 2.5-year pandemic where we had absolutely no income. And that's actually the truth of it. I'm just being really honest, because everyone wants to play, like, big you know, to, everyone wants to play like everything, the game of like, everything's going great. And it's not actively going bad. I'm not worried too much, but it's going like real, like reality.
Yeah.
Like we're not, just because you play Brixton doesn't shield you from a cost of living crisis or the fact that we haven't been able to have, you know, live income for 2.5 years or haven't been able to put out records for 2.5 years. Like that's real. And I think unless you're like in that top band of Harry Styles, Billie Eilish, unless you're in that band, I'd say pretty much everyone underneath that has felt the effects of the last 2 years. 100%. It's impossible not to.
It's a hard thing. Every band I speak to is say how tough, especially bands that come through like working second jobs, not making much money out of touring. And it's just like, thank God everyone loves it. And hopefully everyone does become a bigger band.
This is it. And we count our absolute lucky stars that it hasn't, that we are not at that point, and that we have an incredible community that's been built around the band that invests in our story and what we're doing and invests in us as not only like creators, but like people as well. And that was the big highlight of the release week, like putting out an album literally the day the Queen dies. Like when you're planning out your album, you're like, okay, the 1975 or War Salad putting out an album at the same time.
We'll avoid that.
You know, like, cool. Yeah. We don't want to kind of go up against another alternative band or whatever. Like, fine, it's just part of it.
For sure.
And then you go like, hopefully, I feel like it'll be okay as long as there's not like a big world event happening at the same time, like the Queen dying.
I suppose that's the sort of thing you like joke about as well. Like, it will only happen to us.
Exactly. And there we are on the eve of it. And you can imagine some of the conversations we were having on those first 2 days of like, okay, Radio's not going to play the song, guys. The billboards are not going to happen. Or just like all this kind of crap around just like basically selling and promoting your record.
Yeah.
They had to pull it. Like, okay, this is an unprecedented time. I totally get it. But we also had to like, you know, promote a record. So for the listeners and this kind of community, as I said, that built around the band to just turn up, come to the record stores and come to our pop-up shows, come to the, share our album with everyone they know. Like it was just real, like a really humbling experience to just see that power from essentially strangers. It was incredible. Yeah. And they would only do it if something. Amazons. Yeah, I mean, listen, man. They would only do it if they saw something in the music, they heard something that they liked. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, man, for sure. Well, I'm a big fan of the new album, and I love that you've had another chat with me, man. I love speaking to you. I just wanted to end on one question. If you were to pick one tune off the new record, which one do you think does define it?
Define it. Oh god, yeah. That's
what's the one you're picking?
Can I pick two?
Yeah, if you want to break the rules, Matt, that's fine.
I'm so sorry. It's they're two.
Go for it.
There's one called Say It Again.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite things we've ever done, especially from if you get to the like middle eight section, we go down, we kind of break it down, and then we build it up, and Chris has this like the best solo he's ever done. And that last like outro is like the most euphoric and infectious thing that the Amazons have ever created in our whole lives, and I'm just so proud we did it. And then Northern Star, I think, is up there as well. It's like the most raw and vulnerable, but also kind of strangely uplifting song we've ever written.
Yeah, that's literally got sing along written all over it, man.
Right? Yeah. And the response for that particular song like has been outrageous. It's been unbelievable. We've had a few couples already like designated it as their first dance song already. So oh no, four. Wow, I think it's four. Yeah. Yeah.
Love that, man. Love that.
So those two. Please, people, listen to those two albums.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
So there you have it. That's your orders from Amazon's frontman, Matt Thompson. The two tracks you need to listen to from their new album. The third one from the band, the beautiful Reading outfit, How Will I Know If Heaven Will Find Me. You've got to go and listen to Northern Star and Say It Again. Both huge tunes. Also, my personal loves, Ready For Something and Wait For Me. Big, big songs, man. So pleased that Matt could come and have a chat with me once again. As I said, 3 years since we had a chat. So it was so nice to catch up with him. Always someone who has a lot of time for me, which is so nice. Obviously, highly in demand at the moment. And just, yeah, he just is someone who really, really loves his craft, really pours his heart and soul into what he does. And a lovely, lovely bloke. And honestly, the Amazons, I think, are such a great band, vastly underrated as well. So if you haven't ever seen them live, if you've come across them for the first time now, please go back and listen to their first two albums as well, because it really just, as I said, the journey they've made across these few albums, and as Matt said earlier on in the interview, they've really grown and not stood still, which I really appreciate from them as a band, and I think is actually quite a bold move. Open to criticism, 100%. Some people won't like it, but the fact that they've done it and haven't just created three albums, three carbon copy albums, I think really speaks volumes. So there it is, our Big Smoke In Focus artist for episode 11, season 5. Time now to step back in time.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
I think it's about time for a bit of oldies but goldies.
Big Smoke Music Weekly!
Yes, our little feature on Big Smoke Music Weekly, where we take a wee trip down memory lane and have a look back at some gig reviews from the past. Just a nice chance for us to look back on some great artists and to try and get a feel of what gigs were like back in the day. We're talking back in the 60s, 70s, and also more recently. I did one last week for Good Shoes, sort of 2006-2007 period, back in that brilliant little golden era of indie anyone my age remembers very, very well. So this time out, we are going back to the 70s. This is actually a gig from 4th November 1979 in Bristol at Colston Hall. Now, Joy Division are obviously a band that are loved by so many people and truly, truly adored. If you haven't watched the Control film, which is all in black and white and tells the story of the band and Ian Curtis, I really, really recommend going to watch that. And I've definitely mentioned it before, but 24 Hour Party People is so good. All about the founder of Factory Records, Tony Wilson, and his show that he had on Granada TV way back when. And yeah, it's just got them in it with Joy Division, Happy Mondays, and of course that legendary gig from the Sex Pistols at Lesser Free Trade Hall, where pretty much everyone who's anyone was in the crowd. Definitely worth watching. So about this gig then, on 4th of November 1979, this is kind of like a bit of a fans review in a way. It was actually Joy Division playing support for Buzzcocks. I mean, just imagine being there that night. What a lineup. Two iconic British punk outfits there. So it begins, "No time to mess around, so let's start the review. Joy Division were more exciting live than on record. Ian Curtis is basically..." Love this language that you've used. "Basically a schizophrenic genius. He dances mechanically, moving to the solid, tumbling beat. He moves to the beat of the drums and to the twist of the bass guitar, played by bearded Peter Hook." Now, it is a great description of the way he moves, because I don't think I've ever seen a frontman move quite like how Ian Curtis does. Obviously, I've only ever seen it in videos. But yeah, just mad language that they're using here. It goes on anyway. "I adore Ian Curtis's gruff voice, and it disappointed me that they never had time to play their wonderful new single, Transmission." I mean, that is definitely one of my favourite of theirs. "They sort of made up for this by playing my second favourite song, She's Lost Control. She's lost control. She's lost control again. She's lost control." Being in love with Joy Division sound, I wanted to dance and lose control. I see what they've done there. Very nice, very clever. Oh, but I forgot. No one dances to support acts at Colston Hall. I just love that, like, little dig. It's like, yeah, we're in Bristol, mate. We don't dance to support acts. Like, had to get that. That obviously got the better of them on the night. Anyway, the review goes on. Joy Division are just too good to be a support act. They really deserve to play in their own right. And yeah, the status that they've cemented in British music folklore is just, yeah, above a lot of other bands. Later in the piece, it goes on to say, in my mind, Joy Division surpassed the Buzzcocks by miles. But I did enjoy the Buzzcocks for an entirely different reason. The Buzzcocks had a huge amount of pogo-bility. What the Jeff is that? Shelley and Co. sung oldies and newies, but often you couldn't tell what the song was until they were halfway through the song. Love that, just sticking a knife in there on Buzzcocks. Some Buzzcocks songs were Oh Shit, Harmony in My Head, and You Say You Don't Love Me.
You say you don't love me.
Shelley, of course, with that really distinctive voice, sadly passed away a few years ago. So sad. But yeah, I really like this review because it definitely places you back into the room and just gives you a sense of that kind of younger music goers, just straight up, no holds barred, just don't really give a shit about who they're offending. Especially at the bit where it goes back on its previous opinion on Colston Hall, says, suppose it's all right. It's one of the only places in Bristol you don't need to be over 18 to get in. Love it. And it ends with another line about the Buzzcocks saying, halfway through their set, Shelley made some speech or other, resulting in everyone zooming to the front of the stage. Blimey, talk about being squashed. We'll have another Oldies Bit Goldies for you next time.
Big Smoke Music Weekly.
That is all we have time for on episode 11, season 5. Big Smoke Music Weekly. Thanks so much again for dropping by. It really does mean a lot. And yeah, I hope you enjoy listening to these episodes as much as I love putting them together. I mentioned at the end of last episode, we have a lot of great artists to catch up on from this season. The likes of Palace, Clockworks, Wonder Horse, whose debut album Cub is nearly here. Lime Garden, Porridge, The Libertines, Metronomy, who I spoke to in Slovakia, of all places, this summer. We have got it all for you still to catch up on if you are behind on the game. Do check it out. Stay up to date with our Instagram. I'll be better with that, I'm sure. And yeah, we'll catch you next time with another great In Focus artist for you to listen to. Thanks very much. Stay safe, kids.